Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Now, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed, or I finish the book and then I wait a week and a half or a week and then do the review and then stick it up on the podcast feed, depending on how much life gets in the way and how busy I am and things like that, which, you know, to be honest, is what's happened in this last week, because there's a few things. First of all, actually, let me just say the structure of this podcast, a little bit different. I'm going to do a little bit of news and then some feedback from the last episode, Flood by Stephen Baxter, and then I'm going to get into today's review. So if you just want the review, I say skip forward 10 minutes or something like that. Edit. Actually, skip forward to about 21 minutes and 45 seconds if you don't want to hear any of the feedback and news. Thank you. So, first of all, a bit of news. It was November just recently. It's now the 1st of December. Now, November for me and for many other writers around the world means National Novel Writing Month. And I gave it a go and I managed to write 40,000 words. And then it was like 2 days to go and I still had 10,000 words to write. And I'm like, will I be able to do this? And in the end, I didn't. I just became too busy doing other things. You know, social life does get in the way. And also, I know I can write a novel in a month. I did it 2 years ago. And then last year, I wrote half a novel in November and finished it off and edited it all together in December. And I'm going to do the same thing this year. I've got 40,000 words of the final part of the Mind Tomorrow kind of series or story or arc or world or whatever it is there that I've got, and I'll finish it off in December. I've got a lot more work that I'm doing in December. Pretty much from the 9th of December onwards, I'm away on work trips, which means loads and loads of chances for writing. When I'm at home, it's really difficult. And when I'm, you know, meeting up with my girlfriend, I was spent 3 days with her in Brussels, and another 3 days just this last week in Rome, you know, on holiday and just hanging out and things like that. It means that I don't really want to spend that time writing. And November was pretty much my month off as well. I only did one work trip away, and that was for a few days. And it's very easy to write when I'm at work. Like I say, 4,000, 5,000 words a day, no problem. When I'm not at work, it doesn't work that well. So that's it. So what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So been very busy doing lots of different stuff. And another thing that I've done is is I've sort of started doing some new stuff with the website, because what I used to have was this wiki page or this wiki media wiki setup there as well, where I could add the list of books to it and things like that. So you don't just have like the iTunes feed or the blog. You've actually got a place where all of the episodes are listed together. Thing is, it was a little bit difficult to keep hold of, and it wasn't that useful, and the links were all over the place. So what I've done is, if you go to sfbrp.com and there's a link over on the left hand side. There's a left hand column, or maybe by the time you listen to this podcast, it's moved across to the right hand side, but it just says episode list. Click on there, and what you do, you get a list of all of the episodes so far, who the author is, what the book is, what rating I gave the book. Normally I don't like that to be displayed so prominently, but my brother was saying, hey, when I'm wanting to get a new book from Audible or get a new book from Amazon or wherever I'm going to do, I just look and try and find some 4 or 5 star books from your podcast and I read them. And he says, well, I have on my website, I have this Amazon affiliates link, and he can make up to £20 a month and on this one page. That he's a video producer, and he just puts a list of his equipment saying, here is the equipment that I use when I go out with just a small camera, and all I want to do is get a little interview. So it's a tiny camera and a microphone that you need for it, and this is a list. And some people just go through and buy everything on that list. And he was like, you should just do that. And so that's what I'm going to do. There's a buy link to Amazon.com. Hopefully by the time this podcast goes up, I'd have actually worked out exactly the link format, because it's everything's listed by ISBN number. Or is the N at the end of ISBN? Is that number? Maybe it's like PIN number, where it's personal identity. Anyway, whatever. So it's all done like that. I just need to work out the exact formatting of the links. And maybe if you ever want to buy a book, a science fiction book from Amazon, you can go to my website and go, oh, look at this whole list. But also, it's just that hopefully it's a quite handy list there. It's not just the book episodes. There's all the special episodes that are on there as well, which is hopefully it's good. There's links to Wikipedia, of the Wikipedia page for the book, and the Goodreads page for the book. So if you click on there, you can comment on my review on Goodreads, or you can comment about the book, and if you're my friend on goodreads.com. Hopefully it's just a little bit more useful the way it's all tied together into a single page. In the future, once I do a little bit more coding with my little Python script which spits this out, I'm also going to be able to, there'll be 3 lists hopefully. One will just be listed by episode, the other list will be by author, and the other list will be by ratings. You can see, you can sort of work out like that as well. Yeah, it's got the length, it's got the size of the file, everything that you really need about the episode, all in one place, right there from the front page of the website. So hopefully that archive page is a little bit more useful for everyone who's wanting to go back through the archive. Because it always happens is people say, hey, have you read this book yet? Or you should read this book. And I'm like, yeah, I reviewed that 2 years ago. So let me have a look at my notes. Oh, yeah, another thing that I've got some new dictation software. Hopefully that'll help me write, because lots of people say I've got a motor mouth. There's a new tvtropes.org page that's been written about the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, and it says that I'm a motor mouth, and that's actually one of the categories. I'm not really sure what TV Tropes is, but it was quite fun to see motor mouth, and I'm thinking my motor mouth can help me write too. So I got some dictation software, and all of the notes for this podcast, actually, I just wrote them up. Well, I didn't write them up. I made them by using the dictation software, and it felt a bit weird because it felt like I was doing a podcast for myself, and then it was being transcribed. So the notes for this episode are more detailed compared to the normal few words I just write here and there, and we'll see how my brain goes with it. Maybe I'll be doing less motor mouthing because I'm sticking closer to the more elaborate notes. Maybe the less notes that I have, the more motor mouthy, tangential kind of explorations I do. We'll see how this goes as well. Right, that's all the news. Wow, 6 minutes in. What was I going to do now? Feedback, yes. So the last episode that I did was by Flood, about Flood by Stephen Baxter. And I got loads and loads of emails and comments about that. I was checking the download statistics. Flood, I think, is by far the most downloaded episode in the immediate 2 weeks after release. I always used to be impressed when I got like 2,000 downloads of an episode in a week. And this one, it was 4,346 downloads since I uploaded the Flood episode. And if I bring up iTunes or my blog, oh yes, I'm actually on the SFBRP website now. I can actually see that I released the Flood episode, when was this? Yeah, 14th. So in the 2 weeks, in the last 2 weeks of November, since my last episode, yeah, 4,000 and something downloads, pretty good. So anyway, I got lots of feedback about it, and most of the feedback wasn't negative feedback. They're saying, oh, enjoy the review, but I disagree entirely, and there was like 8 of these emails. Now, normally what I like to do is reply to every email that I get, but I thought I'd just be writing the same thing over and over again. So what I thought I'd do is just reply to them now at the front of this podcast. Here we go. So Chris, it's all about the same thing. Now, I didn't mention, there was like a major theme that these people are picking up, this feedback is picking up, that I didn't mention in my review. And it goes a bit like this. So Chris, he wrote an email saying, Baxter is a great deal more pessimistic about people and things in general. One of the strongest themes in this book is that people, as groups, if not individuals, are almost entirely useless at coming together and working to solve a problem of this magnitude peacefully and rationally. And if you've not listened to the episode or not read the book, there's a flood and it's unstoppable and it keeps rising, okay? And they don't deal with it very well. Nobody deals with it very well. And I said, people are much cleverer at dealing with things than they are in this book. Chris goes on to say, he says, when the water is rising to cover your homeland, you're willing to forget about your neighbours and flee to higher ground and hope against all evidence that things will likely get better someday. And so that's one view there. Okay, Tom says, this is a literary aspect that I don't remember you ever mentioning in your review. Of course, science fiction does not usually express much mood at the novel level. I think the mood is what made the most impact on me about this novel, he's saying. And the sense of hopelessness and lack of self-direction was powerful. And I think Tom was the guy who I said when I was looking through the Goodreads reviews of Friends, I was like, why did you give this book 5 stars? And he did actually eloquently say, Tom, you did eloquently defend your position. Someone else says, Felix says, I totally disagree with you about Flood. You talk about how there are so many things the world could have done about this problem, but I think the book's a really pessimistic look at how humanity would handle a crisis like this, and that it works on that level. People really are idiots when it comes to dealing with big problems like this. Just look at global warming. I also don't have much of a problem with the initial idea of the flood. Stephen Baxter basically shrugs his shoulders and says, there's a flood. This is what it does. I'm not giving you an explanation. That's how a lot of disasters would appear to the people. Inexplicable. But I can sympathize with your annoyance about the lack of shipping after only a few decades. So you can see the point of this, all these feedbacks. Those are just a few samples of stuff as well, about what other people, you know, said and commented and emailed to me about this review, is that I missed this whole point of the book, is that people aren't very good at dealing with things. Now, first of all, I think The reason I didn't see this point, the reason I didn't work all this out, was because I mistook a general pessimistic mood or a comment that people are, you know, useless at coming together and working together and solving a problem. I mistook that for the bad writing. Or put it this way, I mistook the bad writing in the book for that theme. Oh, I got them confused. I said it's like if you're writing a novel like this, you've got to be cleverer than the entire world, or you've got to come up with the ideas and discount the ideas of the entire world if you're talking about a real slow-paced global catastrophe like this and what people would do to get out of it. Now, these people are saying, oh, the mood of the novel and the idea of the novel is that people just don't do that. Now, I... like I say, not only that, I think it was just bad writing. Because I think if people are really that bad, it should have been commented a bit more. It's the, all the stuff about the unlikable character that I was saying and how everyone was just stupid and everyone was just doing this. It's like, yeah, people were trying to do this and were trying to do that. But the point is that there's lots of ships in the world which are entirely discounted in this novel. And there's a bit about, you know, there and a bit about that and a bit about this. But then it's just sort of like, and it's just like, oh no, but that didn't work out. Oh, and then that didn't work out. Oh, and then that didn't work out. But it's never really satisfactorily talked about in this way. Also, I think this whole premise here that people are, or this whole theme that people are useless at getting together and working and solving a problem, I think is untrue. And I'm not that pessimistic. So, of course, I didn't pick up on this theme very well because I disagree with it at a fundamental level. Like my brother said, this book was really powerful to me, and you know, there are some powerful images. He was saying, oh yeah, but the bit at the end where they're all around Mount Everest just before it's about to go underwater and it's the last piece of land there as well. I agree, that was a very, very poignant moment, and also the conclusion of the book and some other bits of it, very, very poignant, and there were some very interesting parts to it. But you can't really say, oh, this is what my brother said. He says, the thing that it really gets to me is that these sections are, you know, people talking about the water rising, and he says it's a good reflection of global warming. The thing is with global warming is that scientists already know all about global warming, and it's there, and it's understood, and if it's not understood, the science will work itself out. You know, that's other feedback that people gave as well. They said, oh, you know, this is also a comment about, you know, the boneheadedness of science, and I disagree with that on a fundamental level as well. But the whole idea of tying this in and saying, oh, look, we're not doing anything about global warming, and therefore, if suddenly the floods started coming in a growing and exponentially growing rate and covering the entire world, we'd be just as useless as we are now at global warming. The thing is, I think that's really confusing the scientific world, the technological world, the societal world, and then the political world all into the same boat, and then calling them that, just like that is humanity. The thing is, that's not true, because the problem that we have at the moment with global warming really isn't that bad. I mean, it really isn't that bad. I know I'm not a global warming denier or anything like that, but it really doesn't impact my life very much at the moment at all. You know, it's snowing outside. It's like the 1st of December, and, you know, there's massive snowstorms as well. Yeah, maybe climate change is there, but a bit of snow now and then really isn't the same as the sea levels rising 3 or 4 meters. Now, maybe in 50 years' time with global warming or whatever it is, sea levels will rise 3 or 4 meters. But that's not the same. Nobody does anything about it in a few years' time, or maybe 50 years' time, when global warming is going to do that kind of stuff, or climate change is going to make all that big difference and stuff, then I'd understand. And then I'd say, yeah, humans really are bad at this. But this isn't the case. In this book, we literally have sea level rising a meter in a year, and then a meter the next year, and then 2 meters the next year and stuff like that. It's not entirely the same as a crisis, like the climate crisis or all the kind of stuff that's going on at the moment. That is a very much of a straw man argument. Now, the argument that I would give is, say, the Second World War. There we had a large section of the world coming together to defeat an evil regime which literally was threatening not just, you know, peace in a few countries next door stuff, but literally world peace was, you know, and it wasn't even peace anymore. The world was already at war. And of course, you know, America came in and things like that. And when America said, right, actually, what we need to do is we need to kick the asses of the Germans back into Germany and beyond. And we've got to kick the asses of the Japanese. And the British was over there going, yeah, we've been trying to work all this out, and we've been trying to do this as well. And all these different countries came together, and it was, you know, it was a bit of a mess. But in 5 years, the amount of technology that was invented to defeat the enemies at the time, or defeat the problem at the time, which was, you know, the Axis powers, if you want to, you know, if you want to take it that way, which was a big problem, and it was a real problem, and it was actually a problem there. I'm not saying global warming isn't a problem, but it was an immediate threat. It was right there, and humanity came together, and like I say, in 5 years, if you look at the, like, the planes at the, in 1938, and then the planes in 1946, it's just night and day. There's nothing there at all. Now, if we had that same level of threat, with, say, with a flood here, which was like a few meters of water raising every year, up until, say, around about 80 meters or something, and then it would tail off a bit and things like that. I'm just going by, like, the global warming. But if it started now, and in next year the sea level was a meter higher, and then the next year was a meter higher, and the next year was a meter higher, I can't think of anything more important in the world which wouldn't, literally, the entire world, I bet, would come together and be like, yeah, we have got to sort this problem out. And it wouldn't be all the nations going for themselves. It wouldn't just be the rich people doing this kind of stuff. The political pressure would be so immense that we would sort out this problem. I don't see anything, right? That's the same thing with all these different science fiction. Aliens come down and suddenly the Earth unites. This happens and then the Earth unites. I know it's a well-worn out theme, but I really do believe it. At the moment, the political pressure isn't there. The business interest is too much. But if the sea level rose 80 meters, that's, you know, we would, I think business would be on the side of actually sorting out the problem. I mean, I'm not trying about preventing the problem. I'm trying to talk about dealing with the problem. And that's the biggest issue in terms of this book. Finally, I think the biggest point here is that the only way Stephen Baxter could make a hopeless situation that humans couldn't defeat is by literally saying, I'm going to take an idea here which is completely unscientific, and there's just no evidence for it at all, and there's not even any explanation. I can understand if he said, okay, the water level is going to rise, no problem. If he says it's going to rise quickly, no problem. If he says it's going to rise quicker and quicker and quicker with no explanation of why it's rising quicker and quicker and quicker, except that it just has to keep rising quicker and quicker and quicker until the entire world is covered with water, it's like the only way to make the situation hopeless for humanity is, like, I know it's to say artificial is a weird thing because it's fiction, and of course everything in fiction is artificial in a way, but the unrealism of the book and the non-science based idea of accelerating water rising is it's impossible for me to respect that decision as that he made as an author, because it's so artificial, which I'll get onto a little bit more in my review coming up here. But I think that's a good way to end it there. Hopefully that's the feedback that everyone wanted. Right. Hopefully people who fast-forwarded 10 minutes there didn't mind actually fast-forwarding another 5 minutes on top of what I said. This week's review, or this episode's review, let's get to it. I'm just going to have a quick drink here. Excuse me. So let me scroll down in my notes a little bit. Oh, there's actually one more note I just saw here as well. I made a note of this email from Tom. He says, I think the plot is far less important to me than it is you. Most of the time when we disagree about a novel, it's because you have problems with the plot. I agree with you when you say stuff happening is not plot. That's not my quote. I got it from another podcast. I can't remember where it was from. Anyway, he says, I don't care if things happening are not part of the plot as long as they're interesting things. Perhaps they add to character development. Maybe they develop a theme. Sometimes they just present a cool idea. This book was not so much plot-driven, but it was more of an episodic view of the end of the world. We see a scene here, a scene there. The Hobbit is a great book, but half of it is just stuff happening between the plot elements at the beginning of the book and the end of the book. So, nice idea, Tom. The thing is, an episodic view of the world, I don't mind if it's good. I don't mind if it's well-written and things like that. You know, Earth Abides, another post-apocalyptic or an apocalyptic kind of book. And it's quite similar to Flood in some ways, and Flood references it very directly at the end of the book there as well. That's lots of episodic things. The thing is, that's actually a good book, and it's well-written, and it makes sense. Flood, I just think, was badly written and didn't make a lot of sense to do it in such an episodic view. Well, I understand and why I did it, because that's the only way to tell such a bad story. Anyway, you say here, the Hobbit is a great book, but half of it is just stuff happening. Thing is with The Hobbit, it was actually called There and Back Again. That is the subtitle, or that was the original title, whatever it's called. The Hobbit, There and Back Again, Lord of the Rings, whatever. The point is, it's called There and Back Again because at the beginning of the book, the hobbits and the dwarves, they want to get somewhere, and then by the end of the book, the hobbit wants to get home again. There's a reason why it's called There and Back Again, is because the driving force, at any point in the book, you can say to someone, you can ask someone, what does this character want? And you'll know what they want. Where are they going? And we'll know where they're going or where they want to go. And all the characters, at any moment in the plot, we can say, where are they and where are they going? And that is what plot is. It means that at any point you can ask a question like that and have it answered. Now, the thing is with Flood is there was no point where you could ever say, what does this character want? And what are they? Even the main character, Lannister, what was it called? Lannickson. He was just like... You're like, well, what does this character want at this moment? And he always wants something different. Here he wants this, and here he wants that, and here he wants this, and all the main characters, what does this character want? Literally, they're wandering up and down the length of the entire of the United States and Mexico and Panama and all the way through down into Peru and stuff like that. Literally wandering around the world, and at no point can you ever say, what does this person want and what are they aiming for before by the end of the book? Now, I don't mind episodes or anything like that. And also, I don't mind if a character doesn't know what he wants by the end of the book. That's no problem at all. But there has to be some direction. If there's no direction and it's episodic, the plot really, really suffers, and the actual driving force of the book really, really suffers. So anyway, that's all I've got to say about plot and Flood and The Hobbit and stuff like that. Maybe I'll read The Hobbit someday for this podcast, see how it goes. Anyway, now, 20 minutes later, maybe I'll go back and say, at the point where I said fast forward, I'll say fast forward to 21 minutes and 27 seconds. Here we go. Today's book is called The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. It was published 2008. It's 374 pages long. It's a young adult novel. I'm not quite sure what age range that's meant to fit into, but you're thinking like teenagers, younger teen, first half of teenage years, I'm guessing, for this book anyway. So, I read this book mainly. It's been recommended loads of times, different people. They say, hey, it's the hot new young adult novel. You should really do it. Yeah. And so I thought, well, I'll do it as well. Came highly recommended. Got the audiobook, listened to it. It's a few hours long. Can't remember exactly how long it is. But yeah, so that's what I did. The world of the book, the setting of the book, it's set in like this post-apocalyptic United States of America. It's no longer called the United States of America. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but the country has been split up into 12, 13 different districts, and then there's a capital city at the center of the country. And it's quite vague the way it's set up, and probably intentionally so vague as well, but all of the different districts have one function, and District 12, where our protagonist comes from, is the district for coal, and District 11 is the district for agriculture, and then the other district is for, you know, telephone, sanitizing. I'm not quite sure what it is, but there's lots of these different things. I'm not entirely sure how the society works, but it's very totalitarian. The districts, they all sort of rose up about maybe 100 years before the novel begins. All the districts rose up because the capital was too powerful, and they were swatted down, and District 13 is no longer existed. I think it was bombed out of existence by some... The whole post, the apocalypse, that everything's happening, it's all quite vague. Like I say, I'm not quite sure how the entire society would function, but it's, like I say, the just by saying it's a totalitarian government, which means there are leaders, and what they say goes. And I think there's a lot of stuff that you can, like, a lot of world building, which you can just sort of brush under the carpet, and you go, oh, don't worry about that. It's just because... And you're like, why is it? Because it's just, oh, no, it's totalitarian. It's like, you know, 1984, which isn't a bad thing, by the way. I'm just saying that in 1984, Orwell really goes into the structure of society and the history of it and why the politicians are making the decision and the mindset of the people and how they're controlling the people. And all of this is very, very detailed. But of course, here we've got a young adult novel, even though I think 1984 works very well as a young adult novel. But here's a young adult novel, and it's not really about that at all. The setting is there, and the setting is important, but really what we're talking here is it's an adventure story, lots of action, lots of adventure, and the entire world building isn't too important. However, the history of the Hunger Games itself, which, of course, what this book is around, is described in quite a bit of detail. So, like I say, there was this revolution 100 years. No, it was like 74 years, because these are the 74th games. So I think it works out. 74, 75, 6? I can't remember. In the 70s, anyway. Threescore years, 10 ago, there was this big uprising, and it was squashed. And then the government said, hey, we're going to keep the people in line, and we're going to punish them, and we're going to have, like, a celebration every year, or a day of a celebration, a festival of remembrance of the time that we put all the districts back in their place again with our high technology solutions. And the idea is the Hunger Games, and this works like this. From every district, you get one boy and one girl between the age of 12 and 18, chosen at random by this kind of lottery in the district capital, and they are then taken to the capital city, prepared and trained in some ways for a few days, and then put into a big arena, and the last one out alive wins, or the last one standing wins. And that's it. And it's all shown on television, and it keeps everyone entertained for a few weeks as this whole big thing is going on. And that's about it, really. So it's a little bit like Battle Royale. Now, I've never read the book Battle Royale, but I have seen it. And in there, they take lots of school kids and put them into a big situation and say, last one out is the winner, and everyone else has to die and things like that. So what I'm trying to think here. So, yeah, so the whole setup there is like this, and this is the main thing about the book that we're talking about. It doesn't really go so much into the society, even though at some points I'd want to. But there we go. So that's pretty much the story as well. So let me just a little bit more in depth, as it's that's the setup. The story actually follows this 16-year-old girl called Katniss. She's from District 12, and she is she pretty much goes out and hunts in the woods. She's not allowed to do that, but she provides strawberries to the police chief, and she gives squirrels to the mayor and things like that. So she keeps everyone in line in the town, or she people don't really mind that she's a hunter, and that she's not so much a hunter. You'd call her what's the word? A poacher is what she's really doing there as well, because nobody is really allowed into the woods around the district capital there. So she knows how to use a bow and arrow, and she's quite good at, finding food to eat and things like that. And at the beginning of the book, she's out with a friend called... I can't remember the name. Gale, and they're there as well. And then they go back to town, and they know that there's going to be the choosing of all the people the two people who are going to be in the games. And of course, she ends up getting chosen to go into the Hunger Games. And the other person is the local baker's son called Peter. And so then, of course, like I say, they go to the capital city together, and they're joined on the way by these other characters. There's the previous winner from District 12, because every year the winner is given a big mansion, and they pretty much get anything they want. And there's only one previous surviving winner from District 12, and he's this old drunkard who helps train them, and he's their sponsor or their mentor, and helps them get on with them. And they meet these other people as well who give them their clothes, and these other people who train them and things. But of course, Gale is there, and he's obviously this good friend of Katniss at the beginning. And kind of, you see it's kind of a love interest there as well, although at the time it's a bit more platonic, because they've grown up together and they met when she was 12 and he was 14, and they're much more sort of almost a brother and sister kind of thing. And then, of course, the local baker's son called Peter, there's a little bit of a love interest there as well, because he's like, oh yeah, I remember you, and I've been keeping an eye on you, and I fed you when I was when you were hungry as well. Oh, that's the other thing as well, everyone's starving in this society except for the people in the in the authorities in the local districts, and also all the people in the capital as well, and I guess that's why they call it the Hunger Games too. And also they get judged on how well they're going to do in the arena, and because everything is told from this first person narrative, Katniss, she never really understands how well suited she is to the Hunger Games. She's all like, oh, I'm going to be useless. But of course, we all know that, hey, she can shoot really well with a bow and arrow. She can shoot a squirrel through the eye at 50 meters. So, yeah, there we go into it. So, from then on, like I say, they get into the arena, and it's very much like, you know, Battle Royale and other, you know, stories that we know from this. There's a bit of, you know, Lord of the Flies in there as well, with the kids turning on each other. It's a bit, you know, reality TV stuff, so there's all the, you know, Running Man and that kind of stuff too. And probably lots of other, you know, books that seem to have influenced this as well at the same time. And, however, like I say, even if this story idea isn't really that that original, it's really not original at all. Literally, as I was going, I was like, hey, wait a second, I remember this scene from Battle Royale, and I remember this scene from The Running Man, and I remember this scene from, you know, all these other you know, movies and ideas like this too. But I really don't mind a story that I read before and then retelling it, because those elements are in there, but of course the main story here is a bit of a love triangle, which I guess is quite a theme. You know, I haven't read any of Twilight, although if you want a really good YouTube series, just search for Alex Reads Twilight there as well. That's how I how I've experienced Twilight, the first book anyway. But I understand there's like Team Jacob and Team what's the other guy's name? Team Jacob and Team. I can't remember. Anyway, so there's a love triangle there. That's like the main thrust behind that story. And you can see it happening here as well, even though it's weird because we don't really see Gale for very much of the novel. He's introduced at the beginning and we get some flashback sequences all the way through. But generally, he's just hanging out there in the back of Katniss's mind. And Peter, her new kind of love interest, is there in front of all the time as well. However, like I say, not very original story there. Lots of elements taken from other places. But it's done really well. And I think this is very important that we still keep getting the same stories told in updated fashions, because it is a new story. It is a new take on this. And I'm sure lots of people will say, hey, this is just Battle Royale, or hey, this is just this or that. But we need to continually update fiction for young audiences. There's no point in sitting them down and say, hey, do you want to know about you know, this and that? Read... all you've got to do is read Lord of the Flies. Now, Lord of the Flies, great book, but the attitudes there aren't attitudes from the kids now. And you can't just say, hey, read... what's that Stephen King book? Is it like The Long Walk or something like that? Great book. You can't just say, oh, read that. And you can't... You know, one of the stories that I really remember about, you know, reality TV and game shows pushing people too far... you know, it happens over and over in TV as well, but not TV, in movies. There's a movie called They Shoot Horses, Don't They? And that's about a dance competition, and it's pretty much the last people dancing win. And it's really damaging for the people involved, and the whole film talks about all the way through. And the end, the final line of the movie is this guy looks to the camera and just says, they shoot horses, don't they? In other words, we've now become non-human. We're not human anymore. We're only here for the entertainment of the masses. You know, the racehorse is running down the racetrack. One of them trips over, broken leg, bang, shot through the head. Maybe they put a, you know, tent around it, and then they kill the horse right there, and it's just like, well, they shoot horses, don't they? And I think this is important, that we keep getting this story retold in a way that's suitable for not just young people today, but for humanity today, for humans today. It's really important. There's no point in just rehashing the old idea. Well, there's no point in just rehashing the old ideas, but I think it's important that we rehash the old ideas with a now view to what we know about reality TV show now, because yeah, there's lots of stuff. I mean, maybe I'm going a bit too much into the themes of this, but I think this is important that we do. I have a friend who I used to work with. His name is Dan, and he was on the very first MTV reality TV show. It was called it was way before Survivor, but it was set on an island. I think it was just called Island or Castaway or something like that, and they just put 12 people on the island, and that was it. And he was just a contestant, but there wasn't even a show, there wasn't a competition, it wasn't going out live, there wasn't any votes at all. It was just lots of people put on an island and to survive. And he told some really interesting stories. And then of course they refined the idea with you know, with audience votes and live finals and, you know, and these game masters who can do anything and put anything into it and do it, all that kind of stuff. And that was very interesting. But Dan was telling me about, they had a pig on the island, and some people wanted to kill the pig to eat the pig, and other people were like, no, you can't kill the pig to eat the you know, to eat it and things like that. And they're like, yeah, but we only have rice. And then he was talking about how some people were sleeping with the production crew to be able to get some more food because they were too hungry. And all of that weird stuff that he was telling me, that some stuff which was on TV and some stuff which wasn't on TV. But reality TV has really progressed since then. And I think it's good to keep writing stories about these same themes over and over again. Put people together. What's going to happen? Will they start killing each other? Yes, probably. Are they meant to be killing each other? Yes, probably. Well, what if they do? Will they want to kill each other? Or will they fight against the system? Yes, probably. There's all these different things. And I'm very interested in reading new and updated versions of that story. What else have I got here? The thing is, I use this new software to make my notes, but the notes are so chunky that I can't... when it's just a line saying this or just a line saying that, I can just pick it up. But now there's too much text. I can't see where I'm up to in my... notes. Oh yeah, once we get into the arena, actually it's strange that the action slows down a bit. Of course, in the very first moment when they're in the arena, there is lots of death straight away, but then it really slows down, and I was expecting all of the time in the arena just to be over, maybe in 2 days or 3 days, and it's going to be all action, but it's not. It really slows down, and we spend quite a long time, probably about a week or 2 weeks, probably 2 weeks in total, in the arena, or maybe not 2 weeks in total, but, you know, say a week in the arena, where I was expecting like a day and a half. But it really is about hunger, which is, you know, of course, the name of the book. But then I understand why it's called The Hunger Games rather than The Fighty Games or The Stabby Games, because just getting enough to eat is a main component of the book. So, oh yeah, at one point the rules change and I'm like, hey, wait a second. Offer a glimmer of hope here. And then, of course... I'm thinking, wait a second, the rules have changed. That means they can probably change again, and I'm not going to give away if they do change again or not. But yeah, it was quite interesting that I really liked how the game masters could change the rules if they wanted to, and they could just introduce randomness, which is really difficult to put in a lot of books, because you're like, wait a second, why did this suddenly happen? But here, because they're in this game show, and you can just watch, you know, Big Brother, or I'm a Celebrity, or all these different kind of things here. And this book is very much influenced by today's reality TV shows, all the way down to, I mean, you don't really get this in these other books that I've mentioned, but like in the movie The Running Man, they just go, okay, you put on that costume and go. Whereas here, the costume is all part, it's like they've seen, you know, in Germany, we have Germany's Next Top Supermodel, and, you know, they have this catwalk show, what is it called, Catwalk Crisis, I don't know what it's called. Anyway, so there's all this part, this whole section about you know, that side of the reality TV show, and the interviews that they have, and the live sections, and the highlight reels, and that's all in there. And also the cooking programs, all the reality TV shows about cooking programs, that's in there too. So yeah, anyway, what was I saying? Yeah, randomness. Bit strange to have in a novel, but it sort of works in this one here. Also, the plotting. I'm talking about the story, but on top of story and the basic story ideas, there's also in the book is the plotting, is in the mechanics of it. And if this person says this here, will it pay off later? And if this person has this skill here, will it pay off later? And if this element is introduced, and then this element is introduced, and then this element is introduced, and they're all different, but yet at one crucial moment, they all come together, and you're like, ah, right. And I really enjoy that about books. Now, there are some authors who do this really, really well. Of course, like Alistair Reynolds, this is what he does. This is why I love his books, is because they are like a puzzle and it's all out there. And then he'll suddenly go, oh yeah, and then this character did this. And you're like, oh shit, that entire chapter there, which I thought was just filling, you know, going back to what I mentioned in the feedback earlier on, you know, you can get a chapter which is just character, or it's just a cool idea, or it's just this, or it's just that. It's really annoying if you get that and it is just a cool idea. If it doesn't come back later and inform the plot, or inform the theme, or inform the characters later on, and that's what plotting is all about. It's not just about the overall storyline, it's actually about interplay of elements, non-character elements, non-technology, or character elements and technology and science and plot and all these different things, and it is very well done in this book. Just the fact that the might as well get into the characters here. The character, Katniss is the main, is our main protagonist and things like that. Peter, I really enjoyed Peter, this other boy from, or the boy entry from District 12. And I love the fact that he was a baker's son, and he was all about food, and he knew all about food, and he knew about pastry, and he knew about bread, and he knew all about this stuff. It's like, that's not going to come in handy at all in the Hunger Games arena, is it? Or is it? And that's the cool thing about it, like that, because Suzanne Collins is sort of brought out. She's obviously done a lot of research into all the stuff that Katniss knows about hunting and flowers and what you can eat and what you can't eat and poison this and doing that and all these different things. Whereas Peter, you think, well, his knowledge isn't going to come in very handy, but then sometimes it can do, or might do. Don't want to spoil it. Yeah, it does sometimes. Anyway, I love the idea that someone is an expert on food and then they just don't get any, which is good. And then there's other characters as well. Now, let me just say a bit about the other characters. There's the main characters with, you know, like the past winner from District 12. We get to meet him. But then there's past winners from all these other districts, and they're just not mentioned at all. I mean, they are mentioned, but they're not named. We don't get to see them, don't get anything at all. There's these TV presenters. They're sort of named a bit. And the fashion designers, they're named too, and we get quite a bit of time with them. But what we don't really get to know is the other kids in the arena. We spend 3 days with them. All the characters spend 3 days together, and they're training together and they're hanging out together. And most of them aren't described. A few of them are described, but most of them not described. A few of them are named, but most of them not named at all. And I don't mind that Katniss, our main hero, wanted that distance, that emotional distance and the friendship distance between her and the other characters, because she knows that they might kill her or might try and kill her, and also she might have to kill them or something like that. But I wanted to know these other characters more, so when Peter and Katniss and our other main characters that we get to know do have to kill them, It's a lot more personal. It's a lot more, this is a human that I'm trying to kill, rather than this is somebody else, or this is just a competitor, or this is just somebody who's trying to kill me. And I understand why she didn't do that. I mean, Suzanne Collins didn't do that, because this is a kid's book, and it might have been a bit brutal to set. In fact, it is a bit brutal, come to think of it, because we do get to know some characters, and of course, most of them do die. I'm not going to give away who lives at the end, which is, I guess, is another reason why this book is written in first person present tense narrative, so you're never quite sure even if the main character survives until the end. It was a bit strange that we didn't do that. And also it's a bit weird that in the action part of it is that Katniss, our main our hero here, our protagonist, she never really has to kill anyone, which is a bit of a pity, because I thought this would be a book about death, and it is a book about death, of course. But it's like every time she has to kill someone, it's always a bit out of self-defense, or it's a bit out of, you know, it's like a reaction, or it's by accident or something like that. It's very rarely where she's actually, there's someone there and she's just like, I have to kill you. If I want to survive, I have to kill you. And then she actually has to deal with it. Most of the time she finds ways of just avoiding dealing with stuff, which I guess is okay in a way. Motives of them is pretty much just to stay alive all the way through, and I really wanted the motive to be a little bit bigger than that for all these characters, because I always wanted, you know, maybe we'll get it into get. I'm just reading a note here. I wrote down here, however, it will Bobby get this in the second book. That's my speech recognition software, I guess. It will probably get this in the second book. I guess that's what my note was there. What else did I put here? Oh, yeah, the relationship. This is a weird thing about the relationship between Katniss and Peter, is that it never really rang true. However, I don't think it was ever really meant to ring true, because there wasn't anything on Katniss's side to ring true. So it's a weird to have an emotional connection between two characters, which is almost entirely devoid of emotion, and like a personal relationship, which is almost entirely devoid of actual personal connection. They don't really... Anyway, it was a weird thing, because of course she just wants, the main driving factor of it is surviving, and it was very strange to have like a relationship developing despite the fact that they're gonna have to kill each other. Again, this has been done before in fiction with exactly the same premise as this, but there it is. Moving on to what else is next? Action. Yep, keeps going. It doesn't really stop at all. Like, right at the very beginning, we get some action, and they do this, and then they're going here and going here. Everything is written in a very sort of matter-of-fact, then they do this, then they do this, then they do this. And then it'll go, wait a second, now we're going to go to a flashback and do stuff like that. What I do like about the action, too, is that it's quite creative, because, of course, kids have to kill each other. There's 12 districts, 2 kids each, 24 kids, which means we have to have at least 23 deaths by the end of this book, if not more. So, of course, we can't just have stab like that. And we find out very early in the book that Katniss is really, really good with a bow and arrow. But at the beginning of the, you know, and there is a bow and arrow there in the arena, but she doesn't get hold of it. Somebody else gets it. So then she's at a real disadvantage. And all the killing goes on this way and goes on that way and goes on this way. And I really enjoy just how many different ways people are killed in the book. It's quite creative. Unlike, say, Battle Royale, the movie, not read the book. But in there, it's really funny that lots of people, everyone's given a weapon. A few people are given swords, a few people are given knives, a few people are given guns, a few people are given saucepans or, you know, a bit of rope or something like that. And they don't stand a chance. But I always wanted to see someone be killed by that saucepan in Battle Royale, but it's mostly guns and axes and poison? Maybe poison, I can't remember. It's been a while since I've seen the movie. I've only ever watched it once. Anyway, next section. Oh, yeah, science and technology section of my review. Quite a mix. We go from, like, natural, like, a rural setting, lots of people starving and things like that. And it says, using bone marrow to hunt in this city. I think it means bow and arrow with my dictation stuff here. I should have really checked it as I was talking, but I didn't. Anyway, but then we get this weird mix of, like, so there's televisions and telephones and all of this different kind of stuff, and then railways. I'm like, railways in America? Oh, okay, maybe that's what they put in place, you know. But then nobody has cars, and then they ride in a chariot and stuff like that. But then once we actually get into the arena, suddenly the technology is magical, and I didn't expect it to be like this. This is being shown on TV everywhere, but they never see the cameramen or the camera people, and they never know where the camera people are. And then the whole arena seems to be rigged in this really high-tech fashion that, like, it's like the Truman Show in a way, is that it's sort of like an unreal environment, yet you never see the cameras. And I really love this about the Truman Show, is that at some points you can see him dodge the cameras, and then the cameras are like, oh, where did he go? Well, oh, he's over here, like that. And then, you know, this happens and that happens. And it's really interesting in the Truman Show, because you do get a glimpse of how the TV show is working behind the scenes. And here, none of that's there. You get these, like, parachutes that drop in with some more supplies, and I'm like, where do they come from? But they just miraculously drop exactly where they need to. And then you get these helicopters, which are invisible helicopters. And in the end, I was thinking, wait a second, is this whole thing just, you know, some kind of computer construction, that it's all happening in her head, and when you die, you're not really dying? And there's this whole episode at the end of the book where I'm thinking, wait a second, is this, how come these characters are coming here? Again, I don't want to give it away, because it's this really freaky section at the end of the book, which I don't think I mentioned. I don't want to spoil it, but it's suddenly like, wow, that's suddenly really random. You needed it at the end of the book, because it's been really dark up until then. There's been quite a few freak out moments, and suddenly they're like, now we've really got to freak the kids out. We've got to give these 12-year-old kids reading this book, we've got to give them nightmares. Right, okay, let's put in this element. And they do, and it's at that point I'm thinking, is this real? I mean, is it actually real? But maybe, I guess so, but there is that kind of, like, niggle in the back of my head where you're never quite sure how big the arena is, if you keep walking in one direction and things like that. But I think it is meant to be real. But I say that the level of technology and the magical elements of the technology is so out there that there was always this nagging feeling at the end of my head. But hey, like I say, it's not that well described, or the technology is just, you know, it's described by hand wavium, I think is the new cool term here. Moving on, quickly, 47 minutes of this podcast already. Probably still won't be as long as last week's. Writing is all present tense. It jarred constantly, maybe because it was an audiobook. And like I said, when I was reading Halting State by Charles Stross, second person present tense narrative. You are doing this, you are doing this, you are thinking this. And I'm like, I thought that would be really jarring, but I just fell into it and it was no problem at all. And also other books which are written in first person, not first person, in present tense, again, no problems. A book like Snow Crash, you just sort of fall into it, and after, like, the first two lines or first few paragraphs or something, never even noticed it to the end of this book. Maybe because it's an audiobook, I noticed this all the time, and it was quite jarring. But then, because it was so jarring, it almost became a feature. Maybe that's me just being an apologist, I'm not sure, but I thought it did work very well. And, of course, you need to have it first person. And no, if it is first person, it has to be present tense, because, like I say, you're not quite sure how if Katniss will survive. Actually, I always thought that Katniss would survive, and I'm not going to give away if she does or she doesn't survive. She does survive. But however, that's not the main crisis, because the main problem isn't her surviving, because she's the star. So it's not a problem if she does, it's not a problem if she doesn't. But there is something else. It's like she doesn't want to have to kill Peter, the boy from her neighborhood. So actually the main crisis or the main thing that she's wanting to prevent isn't her own death. She doesn't really mind if she dies herself, but what she doesn't want to do is, you know, bring any harm to other people, including her sister, her parents back home, and all this other stuff. And also, well, the weirdest thing, though, is that the flashbacks, they were also told in the present tense, and I think flashbacks really need to tell them in past tense. That was even more jarring. The first person present tense narration really did work well, though. There's this moment where Katniss is thinking one thing, and then something happens, and then she's thinking something else, and it's like, yeah, you really were mistaken. Like, at one point, she's thinking, oh, I'm doing so well in this TV interview, and I'm swirling around in my dress, and everyone loves me. And then the next person gets up, and she realizes, oh, no, they didn't. They pitied me, and they thought I was just a bumpkin, and I'm really not that clever. And this person now, that person's much, much better than me. Yeah, they're really in control of the situation. And so I really like it how she can go from one moment to the next and be completely confident in what she thinks now, and then completely confident in the opposite thing. Well, not completely in the opposite thing, but she's completely confident about her opinion about this matter now, and then it changes, and now she's completely confident about it as well. And I think this really brings out, like, the young... She's only 16, our character, as well. Otherwise, like I said, the writing is very straight to the point, and it just goes, right, it's action, adventure, they do this, this person does this, this person does this, and then we do this, and then we go here, and stuff like that. Also, it's a very violent book. Like I said, this is a children's book, or, you know, a young adult book. Very violent, and I actually quite like that. Because, you know, lots of death. And, again, I think this is something that, you know, I think one of the main themes of this book sort of like is how television and entertainment desensitizes us to the amount of death and the amount of killing. And it's a bit weird how distant our main character is from the killing going on around her. And she's just like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do to survive. And it's like, yeah. So it is a bit weird as well. But I remember, like I say, reading Lord of the Flies by William Goldberg for the first time. And there's a character that dies in there, and then there's another character who's killed, and then there's all this other stuff going in. And I thought, you know, when I was reading this when I was like 12 years old or 11 years old for the first time, this was like the first time I'd ever seen a representation of children dying and children killing. Spoilers there. Children killing in Lord of the Flies. And I mean, it was the first time ever. I thought it was the most awesome thing possible. So hopefully this book will be the awesome, hey, kids killing one another kind of book for these for young adults or children today, which, again, I don't think this is a bad thing at all. I'm quite a sensitive guy, and I think I'm, you know, quite empathetic, and I'm completely uninsensitized. What would be the word? I'm completely sensitive to people dying. Next up, narration. Pretty good narration. Carolyn McCormack. Top marks there as well. No complaints there at all. Not really much to say. You know, it's just average, but good average. So, themes of this book. I think I've already talked a lot about this as well. Like, in most sort of post-apocalyptic... Well, not post-apocalyptic. In most totalitarian kind of government setups for an awful, there's a lot about bucking the system or revolution, you know, some kind of protest. Here, we don't have anything like that. The only protest comes, you know, it's sort of slightly bending the rules in the game or something like that. But really, not anything at all, because when they do bend the rules in the games as a some kind of protest, it's not even a protest, because they're only doing it to their own advantage because they don't want to die. You know, and I think for protest and revolution and all these other things, sacrifice is important. If you're going to protest something by taking the day off work, that's fair enough, you know. But you don't just take the day off work when you go on strike. You go and stand out in the cold and, you know, stand at the picket lines. That's what the sacrifice is when you do some, when you have a protest. And that's what you want. I want to see in books like this. Again, in the book Running Man, who actually wrote that? Because I always think about, whenever I think of the Running Man, I always think of, was it Philip K. Dick? I can't remember. No, I don't think it was. Anyway, at the end of that, in the book, there is great sacrifice. And in the movie, there isn't really great sacrifice, because he gets the girls and save the day and all this different kind of stuff. And, you know, a protest is only a protest if there's some kind of sacrifice. And like I say, here, we don't have anything like that. Maybe it'll be in book two, but I'm not really sure, because the main driving force of any action that they take is survival and not wanting to kill. But then it's not really... You know, it's not really sacrifice there. So that's a bit strange thing that you can normally pick out of these totalitarian government, you know, 1984 kind of novels that you don't get from here. Some personal response ability. responsibility being two words in my notes today. Anyway, there's normally young adult books are about that, and I guess there is a little bit in there, but it's not really strange because the main character, Katniss, never really takes responsibility. She's always being taken advantage of. She never really knows what's going on, and when she does know what's going on, she's always completely passive, which is really strange. Hopefully, in the second book and third book, she gets out a bit of that. Anyway, parallels with reality TV shows. I think I've already talked about that. Big Brother, Survivor, it's all in here as well. Next Top Supermodel, I made a note there. I talked about that before. That's a German TV show. In your country, you'll probably have a different name for German as Next Top Supermodel. Yeah, but the premise is still the same. Like I say, this game master being able to control everything. Simon Cowell goes, he goes, you're in, you're out. He's the producer, he's the director, he does all the things. He's got ultimate power, and I really like that idea, the exploration. Again, it's not a new exploration, but when you say, you're fired, boom, you're out. Especially in this book. I talked about random situations that the characters find themselves in before. Oh yeah, of course. This I made a note here. I think I made this note when I was reading the book. I said this TV show would never work because people don't get an audience vote, and I don't think they'd ever watch. I don't think a TV show will ever become as big, or like a reality TV show can ever become as big as X Factor and all these other big ones, because people want to vote their people in, or they want to vote people out. You know, it's that big thing, you know, Big Brother, you vote people out. In the X Factor, you vote people to stay in, which is a bit strange because it means that terrible people can stay in if they get enough votes. But if then they were voted out, those terrible people will be voted out. So voting to keep people in actually keeps the terrible, annoying people in longer. Because to vote them out, all the other people have to get more votes, and that's more difficult than to just vote to get rid of one person. Anyway, so we don't get any voting in this book, and I think, actually, that the sort of missed a point there. I would have really loved to see some kind of voting. It is mentioned about, you know, oh, there is some public opinion, and, you know, they're changing the rules because, you know, the story between Katniss and Peter is so interesting, and they want to do it this way, but there's never any of that vote, and I would have always wanted to see the element of a vote, which is good. And then again, I'm not really an expert in reality TV shows. I've only ever seen one episode of any of them. It's still 2010. I was invited to perform on Britain's Got Talent with my juggling show, and I might do it in 2011. Maybe. We'll see how it goes. For me, though, one of the big themes of this is actually it's about food. I mean, this is not a big theme. It's just something I really enjoyed about this. I've never been so hungry reading a book. It's called The Hunger Games. I should have known about it. But all the time, right from the get-go, they're going, oh, we're going to pick some strawberries, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. Oh, and this thing, and I was really starving, and then there was this baker, and then I went to this bakery, and it was great, and he gave me this... And then I went to here, and it's all food, and then they go here, and then they go to the capital city, and they get given loads of food, and it's all great food, and they put on weight, and then they get into the game arena, and they start starving, and then it's all about food, and then they deliver food, and then they have to find food, and all the time, the baker, he's always talking about food, and Katniss is always talking about food, and I was just literally, I was listening to this audiobook all the time, I was in this constant state of salivating and stomach growling, belly growling all the way through this book. It's unbelievable. Never felt that way about a book, and I really understand why this book is so appealing. You know, it's got loads of great stuff in it. Like I say, the action's great, the characters are all right, but you know, the character journey and the way the character think, I think, is really interesting and complex. Getting onto the conclusion here as well, I guess. The plotting is great, the deaths are interesting, everything that's going on in the book. But then I just thought, if this book didn't have as much food in it, didn't have all the talk about food in it all the way through, it would have never have been as interesting as it is. You know, I would have never been as engaged as it is, because all the way through I had this visceral response. And I think this is a big key, that the next time I'm going to write the book, actually what I'm going to do is, like I say, I've written my first book, my first two novels in this Minding Tomorrow series, and this third novel. Once I finish the third novel, I'm going to go through and edit all of the three novels again and make them a bit more unified. I've learned a lot about writing, so I'm going to rewrite the first one, sort of structure it. When what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through and put loads of references to food and what people are eating and what people are smelling, you know, and those kind of things. And I reckon it'll just be a better book. All I need to do is talk about food. I think that's the key, and I've never really noticed it before in a book to this extent, except the book is called The Hunger Games. I guess that's why people like cooking programs on TV, because they look at it and go, oh, I gotta eat, I need some food and stuff like that. I just had some roast chicken early on today and I'm still tasting it and it still tastes great. Well, I still taste it, but it's there. Anyway, so I'm going to give this book 4 stars. Like I say, I did pick up on quite a few things that I didn't like about it, but I think overall the book is strong enough to keep going through, and I was actually really surprised how good it was. Not because I don't think young adult books are good, but it's just because it's so hyped. And often when I read a book which is highly hyped, sometimes it stands out and I really enjoy it, but it doesn't happen as often as it should with like a new book like this. Anyway, I did really enjoy it. I recommend it for anyone, except if you're a really young kid. But I think most people who listen to this podcast are older. But I think it is worth reading. It really isn't anything new. It really isn't anything original. But I think it's important to retell stories in at this quality and with the with modern sensibilities like you do get in this book. Like the cynicism and sort of like the bowing and scraping of the main character to authority and how she never really questions authority, I think is very important for people to read now, even if you just want to react against it and think, oh, well, you shouldn't do that. And like the whole area, the way that the world is set up, and like there's Hunger Games and everyone in the capital is happy with it. Nobody in the capital likes the Hunger Games. But it's weird how like there's this totalitarian regime and everybody, all that everyone we see in this book is just like, yeah, Hunger Games, great. And you think, well, there should be one or two people who would think, wait a second, is this really necessary now? Wouldn't the best thing to do not to get together kids and kill them? But again, sometimes you just want to go, nope, we're not going to comment on that. I'm going to tell the story in a very... we're going to tell a well-worn story in a different way than before with slightly more modern sensibilities, and I think that's very important. Anyway, I'm not going to read the next book in the series, I think mainly because someone said, actually, the next book in the series, the story does get bigger, but then you've got to read the third book, and the third book is so bad that it really destroys the credibility of the second book, but not the first book. So I'm not quite sure if I'm going to do it. If enough people say, hey, yeah, you should really finish off the series, I will do over the next year or so. I'll make a point of reading the next two books in the series, but I probably won't. So the next book I'm going to review is, well, it's a bit of a toss-up, actually. I've got Eiffelheim by Michael Flynn, which I started reading earlier this year, and I think I really want to get it finished off by the end of the year, because I've read most of it. You know, I'm over halfway through. It's just I've never got around to finishing off, because it's a paper book, and I always read a bit of it, fall asleep, read a bit more, fall asleep, read a bit more, fall asleep, and then I go away on a trip or something and don't take it with me because it's a big chunk of paper, and it's annoying to take a book away like that because I have to bring it back and give it back to the bookshop because it's a lending book rather than a book that I've bought myself. Another book, George Orwell, 1984. I've got it there on my iPod now as an audiobook. I'm probably going to read that soon or listen to that soon. I've got Mistborn by Brandon Sanderson as well, a fantasy book as well. I've got some other books there as well. Terminal World by Alistair Reynolds also there on my iPod. And I've got some ebooks too that I'd like to get to. Finish Frankenstein as well by Mary Shelley. I read half of that and still haven't got around to finishing. I should just get on with it and finish that. Anyway, I've gone on an hour with this podcast. Thanks a lot for sticking through it. Like I say, check out the new website or the new page on the website for all the links, and you know, all the a big list of all the episodes. Hopefully you'll find that interesting. Send me a message, luke@juggler.net is my email address. I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter. You can follow me there as well. Lots of different updates about all different things I'm doing. Best thing to do is look at my blog, which is lukeburridge.com/blog. I'll check out my own fiction, which is lukeburridge.com, and then click on fiction. Finally, goodreads.com is a great way to comment about this review and read other people's comments about this review, and also just to make sure that I can, if you become my friend, I can see what you think of books and I can see what you're reading now. And that really does influence me, because if lots of people recommend a book to me and I look on goodreads.com and it says, hey, your friends think this about this book, I do read those comments and I do see what other people write about books that I've also reviewed and things like that, or books that I'm planning on reviewing. It's really important that you do that. Or it's not really important, but I like it if you do, and it's really handy. So go to goodreads.com/Luke Burridge and you can become my friend, or you know, there's a discussion place where people can talk about the SFBRP and books that they've read and other episodes or issues because of it. So thanks a lot for listening. Hopefully I'm not talking too quickly at the end of this book, and because I've got to train myself to talk, so the dictation stuff, then you got to tell me, full stop, new paragraph. See you next time.